Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Sorry about the early bailout yesterday evening, but it's not nearly as nasty in here as it was last night. It's a rather pleasant 84 in the Horn Studio sauna this evening. I can feel a little bit of cool air blowing from the air conditioner. It should be quite tolerable, and I'm rather excited. I don't like knocking out early, but it was beginning to feel pretty icky. That's a complex scientific term, icky. Hi, this is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go to if you want to pop into the chat room and be part of the rollicking, real-time, multimedia extravaganza that is the general carrying on that takes place during each and every program, during the program hours, the live time, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, and all points in between. Good evening to Chugga Punch and Texas D, as well as inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Lottie and Sparky, all in the chat room as the program begins. Yes, blast on the cowbell for the punctual types. Although we do not stand on ceremony, and you can wander in any old time that you want to. If you'd like to join the chat room and never have, it's easy. And like everything else at the Horn, it's free. Just pop by, pick out a screen name and a password, and away you'll go. Yep, see how it works? Cool, huh? Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And, yes, it is Friday on the front porch on the Horn. And we tried, this is an entirely listener-supported effort. You'll find no insurance ads for robot attack insurance or satellites falling from the sky insurance. No Buy Gold Now ads. No ads for vacuum cleaners that pick bowling balls up off of your mattress made of Swedish foam developed by NASA and drops it back there right next to where you're laying, but not where you're laying because that would hurt as you await for the herbal remedy to take effect and grow hair on your head like a freaking chia pet. No, not, all the while listening to Rush Limbaugh on your Bose Wave radio. Nope, none of that. Just your insistent determination that this program continue to exist. And with that in mind, I want to thank Sal for finishing off Jay Cruzen's challenge last night. And I want to thank Jack for getting us started this evening. That means there's only $150 to go to finish out a show's worth of fundraising. Thank you very kindly, Jack, down there in Shreveport. Appreciate it very, very much indeed. Let's see. Friday on the front porch, of course, the standard. Instructions apply. If you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch before, it too is a rollicking, rousing, good time that we do once a week, and it involves what we like to call the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, comprised of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, moderated by Sparky. If you've never participated and you would like to, it is easy to do. Skype is very simple, really. It's just a matter of getting used to the interface. Everything is. Skype is quite easy. Just send on Skype, send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, Sparky Dunk. Sparky has not, even though he is a third-stage Guild Navigator, he has not folded space this evening because it is apparently 105 degrees in the man cave. Let's see. So send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk. He'll get you into the group. We also, of course, have the Stress Line, so named for the late, great Bill, Mr. Stress Miller. We put it in place so that he could have a spot in which to participate in Friday on the Front Porch. Being visually impaired, he had a devil of a time with his computers, and Skype was just simply out of the question. And that applies also to our buddy Kevin in Colorado Springs. And they used to team up and join like a conference group call and then call into the Stress Line. But it's open and available as well, should you wish to use that. Oh, by the way, I didn't even mention after the fundraising of course, the contribute, because you never know, there may be new listeners. It happens. There is a PayPal interface under the tab Contribute at headonradionetwork.com. And for first-time users, please understand, if we didn't put those really nosy questions about that thing you did in third grade on the interface. That's strictly a PayPal widget thingy. You can ignore the nosy questions. Just put in enough information to get you to the next page, and that's where you make all your PayPal choices. If you prefer to use the United States Postal Service, for as long as we have it, until the Republicans manage to take it out back and slash its throat, turn it upside down, drain all the blood out of it, and kill it and steal the money, then by all means, feel free. The mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. Okay? Okay. Remember, checks and money orders should never be made payable to Bob Kincaid, as I know I don't see him, and Boss Man Wayne handles that kind of thing. They should be made payable to The Horn. Thanks, one and all. Hopefully we'll get that out of the way, and I won't have to say anything more about fundraising for the rest of the night. Yay. Where to begin? We've got a lot to work with. We've got some leftovers, and leftovers can be tasty. But we've also got some new stuff. I was going all the way back to high school when they taught us about those compare and contrast essays. You got one thing, you compare it to the other, and then you find the places where they diverge, and that's the contrast. And, well, the ultimate contrast is black and white. Right? So, how about a black and white contrast of life here in Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth, now, today, forever? Mm-hmm. For the purposes of this little compare and contrast examination, we have to toddle over to Little Rock, Arkansas. And we have to time travel. We have to ask Sherman to set the Wayback Machine for June 1st, in which a man of color by the name of Eric Wilson, according to Fox 16, Arkansas, a man named Eric Wilson, who is black, was minding his own business. He's also legally blind. He can't see anything more than shadows. And there's actual video in which two police officers command him to approach them. And then they say, take your hands out of your pockets. And he does. Then the police begin to handcuff blind Eric Wilson. So he's got his hands behind his back. And then the cop just shoves Eric Wilson to the ground. Fox 16, Arkanstan, interviewed Reggie Koch, K-O-C-H. No, Ken, I don't think. It's at least maybe not distantly to the Koch brothers. Reggie Koch is Mr. Wilson's lawyer. And he was interviewed by Fox 16, Arkanstan. Eyewitness team coverage news, live eye. Right. And he said, listen, they tell him to come over here, and he walks toward them. When they tell him, take your hands out of your pockets, he takes his hands out of his pockets. What more do they want? But then there's the police report where the heroic officer says, he pulled away violently, causing me to lose my grip, and I was afraid that Wilson would strike myself or my partner with the handcuff. Yeah. You know what made these armed to the teeth police officers nervous? He had this black thingy sticking out of his pocket. You know, it might have been an assegai, possibly a razor. No, Eric Wilson's a blind guy, and it's actually a clock. Provides an audio declaration of the time of day. Clock. Mm-hmm. None of this makes sense. Unless, of course, you just say, well, it's Merca. The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. Now, apparently the police decided to come after Eric Wilson because some terrified person had dropped the dime to 911 and said, there's a man, and he's either running away, or he's chasing somebody, and somebody looks afraid. No, really. That was the call. So a guy standing around at the bus stop, who happens to be black, who is neither running away nor chasing anyone, is a man fitting the description, in cop speak. Because, well, it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and Eric Wilson got to his bus stop a little late. He had just gotten off work. He works at Lighthouse for the Blind. And so, having missed his bus, he started to walk home. And now he has a back injury to show for it. Because he was in the wrong place at the wrong time with the wrong cops. You know, I was driving, I was out today, I had to run a couple of errands, and I drove by the little Rippy Mart, and there was a sheriff's deputy there, and he was putting gas in his roller. And he was, of course, slick-skulled, like a gang member. And I sort of asked myself, when did that start? Because I honestly don't know. When did police stop looking like members of our actual community and start instead looking like, characters out of the wrestling TV show? But he did. Go figure. Maybe, I don't know, maybe it's because Aryan Nation militia right-wing types invaded the authority structure of the police department. kind of hard to say. But then again, it wouldn't make much difference whether the police officers in question here had fabulous locks like Fabio or were, you know, absolutely slick-skulled like something out of a, you know, wrestling show. So we have that, Eric Wilson in Little Rock, Arkansas, thrown to the ground and generally physically abused for the crime of LWB, which is, of course, living while black. And, of course, any time that the black person assaulted by police remains alive, we have to say, well, at least they didn't kill him. Yeah. So, compare that with 21-year-old Leighton Marchetta of Gainesville, Georgia, Stan. Leighton Marchetta, 21 years old, is, of course, a white guy. He's kind of a bubba. He's got him sort of a, he's got him a beard going on and whatnot. It was Monday morning, and it's just, this is the city, Gainesville, Georgia. Right. There, so the day was just getting started. When, at 8 a.m., 21-year-old Leighton Marchetta drunkard and cooters off ox, got in the car and toddled on down to the state police detachment. And he took out his hunting rifle with which he had loaded ammunition capable of penetrating a bulletproof vest, and he squeezed off a few rounds at a couple of troopers. A round or two, maybe three, whatever. And as he took pot shots at the troopers, he hollered, "Y'all gonna have to kill me! You hear me? You're gonna have to kill me!" The two troopers, Steve Thompson and Jeremy Allison, being well-trained, took cover and began to yell, "Hey! Put down the gun!" In the meantime, the Hall County, Georgia SWAT team came barreling in an armored vehicle, and the authorities sent up the state police helicopter and a little bit later, 21-year-old Leighton Marchetta was taken into custody with little more, well, with only a bullet wound to his shoulder. It's only a flesh wound. Sergeant Richard Harper, the Georgia State Police, the post commander, said, "Being presented with the situation they were in, both of them did very well and reverted back to their active shooter training. They both went for cover and gave the verbal commands for the subject to drop the weapon." Twenty-one-year-old Leighton Marchetta has since been arraigned on two counts of aggravated assault of a peace officer. He is, of course, expected to fully recover from his shoulder wound, non-life-threatening. Leighton Marchetta is white. Had he been darker than the color of a typical grocery store bag, we would be talking about funeral arrangements being planned for 21-year-old Leighton Marchetta. And Leighton Marchetta would have died in a hail of gunfire. Or if he was taken alive, he would have been beaten within an inch of his life, or possibly to death. But then again, looking at the mugshot of young Leighton Marchetta, he does appear to have at least a little shiner on one eye, and it appears that his lip has been split, so apparently a little rough justice was taken out on him when he was subdued after he already had a shoulder wound. Of course, in a matter such as this, questions arise. Such as, why does a 21-year-old Bubba in Gainesville, Georgia, get up drunkard and cooters off ox at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Monday and go decide to shoot it out with the state police, right? Well, he's a veteran. Leighton Marchetta is. And he does have an active diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder. The Army kindly let him go from its ranks in 2014 in June, you know, a year ago, after he tried to off himself. Well, according to Leighton Marchetta's daddy, Sunday night, Leighton got righteously intoxicated, knocking down a fifth of vodka, because the news had reached him that a buddy of his in the Army had attempted suicide and succeeded. He was apparently a real handful for Papa Marchetta Sunday evening, but he said his boy woke up Monday morning, didn't have any memory of it being hateful and argumentative and combative or any of that stuff, just, you know, kind of felt crummy, I guess. Papa Marchetta said his son was still upset but calmed down when he drove away. But Daddy didn't know he had taken the family hunting rifle with him. Papa Marchetta knows where his bread is buttered. He profusely thanked the state police for displaying restraint in not helping his son commit suicide by a cop. Y'all gonna have to kill me! And then took the moment to stay at the podium and blast the Veterans Administration for the fact that his son has experienced a lot of delays in receiving what it was apparently desperately needed mental health treatment, because I don't think a fifth of Popov is on the approved list for self-care in cases of post-traumatic stress disorder. Lee Marchetta said, "It is a shame that it came to this. In order for him to even possibly begin to receive treatment from the VA for his PTSD." Well, Papa, he might get PTSD treatment from the VA, but what he's going to get for sure is treatment from the Georgia criminal justice system. And you know, there may be enough compelling evidence that the judge will give him a walk or put him on probation, so that he can pursue treatment. But remember, Georgia does, of course, have for-profit prisons, and those beds don't fill themselves. Right. Meanwhile, although he was feeling introspective, apparently, Papa Marchetta did not take cognizance of the fact that he had at least one firearm in his home, which his son apparently used to some effect, although not particularly deadly effect. Because, see, if a 21-year-old with post-traumatic stress disorder gets all liquored up and then gets up Monday morning and drives off to the state police post hollering, "Y'all gonna have to kill me," and he ain't got nothing in his hands, well, you really don't know what the outcome would be, do you? They might just kill him because he doesn't have a gun. Police are known to do that. It makes the shooting a little bit more, oh, shall we say, a little less adversarial. Or they might just go and punch him in the face a few times and take him and lock him up and ask him what in the Sam Hill he thought he was doing. But it did not occur to Papa Marchetta that having a firearm in the home made that scenario much more likely to unfold in the disastrous, although not fatal, fashion that it did. Compare and contrast. Unarmed black guy, busted back, worked over by the cops. Unarmed black blind guy, drunk, gunned up, taking shots at the cops, young white guy, we all feel terrible for him. And, of course, we feel terrible for him because of what he's witnessed, what he's seen, what he's been through, what he was put through. And, of course, if he's seen combat, he's only 21 years old. So that means 20, that means he joined up when he was 18. Yeah. And that means, you know, since 2012. Can't hang this one on Bush. Sorry. I try. When we can, we do, but we can't. So, that's Arkenstan and Georgia. How's about a little Illinois? Well, there's a priest in Illinois who has had enough of the gun violence in his home state and his home community, and is speaking actively with all the power and majesty that comes with being a Catholic priest, who isn't under indictment. Apparently, Father Michael Flager is trying to follow the teachings of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, speaking out about violence, particularly gun violence, and who helps to facilitate it in the Chicago area. The who helps facilitate it part would be your National Rifle Association. He has gone so far as to lead protests outside of a particular gun shop, Chuck's Gun Shop of Riverdale, Illinois. I don't remember references to Chuck's guns in Archie comics, of course, centered in Riverdale. Not that it was Illinois, but, you know. And hoo-wee! Didn't it piss off the gun goobers when he did? So last night, there at his home church, where he is the priest, the head man, which is St. George's in Tinley Park, he went to speak to his parishioners about the gun violence that plagues the area. He put on his priestly collar, and over that he put on a red T-shirt that featured photographs of people killed in gun violence incidents printed upon it. And he was going to be talking about gun control, gun violence, the hell on earth unleashed by the firearms industry and their very effective mouthpiece, the National Republican Rifle Association. He's a well-known presence on the south side of Chicago, Father Flager is. And so when the word went out that he was going to be having one of his gun talks, guess what happened? Well, the NRA got hold of the ISRA, ISRA. Oh, the first, that's like IS, almost like ISIS. And the Illinois State Rifle Association decided to go and pack and enter into that house of God so they could scream at the priest. Really? When I saw this story, I was immediately reminded of the way that these right-wingers will behave. You know, churches, sanctity, decorum mean nothing to them. It was many years ago now when we had a blessing of the mountain up on Golly Mountain near where I live to sort of try to get together and pull some positive energy together to try to stop the destruction of a mountain that had stood sentinel over this community from long before there was even a community here. And we had priests, in this case, Episcopals, not Catholic like Father Flager, but we had a couple of Episcopal priests, and they had on their priestly raiment. And they did their priest stuff. And one of them was delivering a homily about the horrors being visited upon our community by the coal industry and the destruction of our mountain. And that's when the coal thugs showed up, came buzzing around the mountain and down the mountain on their four-wheelers, and one of them jumped off his four-wheeler like it was his trusty steed, which I guess it was, and they were all wearing matching colored T-shirts. And he come running up, and he stood right there in the face of the priest and begun a sputtering and a spitting and a screaming and a carrying on about, "Well, I don't know what God serve, the same God you serve. How dare you? You're trying to take the food out of my belly. You're trying to take the food off my family. Oh, my God, we're going to go on the welfare. Yeah, how can you? That ain't what Jesus..." And so I recognize the type in the story, because that's what the Illinois State Rifle Association did last night at St. George's in Tenley Park. Because, see, they've decided they don't like Father Flager. Because Father Flager isn't, he's not soft-soaping his message. At the rally last weekend at Chuck's Guns, where oodles, complex scientific term, mathematical in nature again, oodles of guns that have found their way into the slaughterhouse that is Chicago have come from. Father Flager said, "I'm just tired. Tired of the NRA. Tired of them prostituting themselves and buying politicians in this country. I'm tired of gun manufacturers and John Riggio from Chuck's making money off of the blood running down our streets and our children laying in cemeteries. See, what I want is for Chuck's to be responsible. Title guns like cars. You title a car, title a gun." And that's what he's arguing for. He wants people to he wants gun owners to take responsibility for the firearms that they own. Title them, insure them, and when somebody gets killed with one of your guns, own up. So last night in Chicago, in Tinley Park, at St. George's Catholic Church, he took to the lectern and began discussing what he thought the teaching of the Catholic Church should be in regard to firearms and gun violence. I would think this would be easy. This would be a no-brainer. Because even as the Romans are laying hands upon Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, what does he say? "Peter, put up thy sword. For those who live by the sword shall die by the sword." See, that's the thing the gun goobers don't get. That's not just a statement about swords. It's not because those who live by the gun shall die by the gun. Those who live by the assegai shall die by the assegai. It's a general statement of principle. Nonetheless, the gun goobers, well, they're a little short on manners. They're a little remember what the gun goober from the other night said? An armed society is a polite society. So if everybody had a gun in that church, I guess the Illinois State Rifle Association wouldn't have behaved as they did. But instead, in a church in which people were there who had lost children, whose children had died in gun violence, instead of manifesting any sort of common human decency, any sort of simple sympathy for grieving parents, grieving brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, cousins, neighbors, teachers, the members of the Illinois State Rifle Association heckled the bereaved.
Yeah, but your kid's dead, but you won't take my gun! My gun's more important than your dead kid! Wolverines!
Oh, I'm sorry. I did make one mistake. Father Ken Fleck is the pastor at St. George of Tinley Park. And according to CBS Chicago, he repeatedly had to call for order inside his house of God. Because you can't count on a bunch of gun goobers to behave themselves or even act like human beings. I commend the families of the bereaved for not going over and in that house of God simply stomping the ever-loving shit out of the gun goobers. But then again, you might not want to do that because they probably brought their guns to church. Let's check in with the coverage from WGN Chicago, shall we?
I want people who own guns to be held responsible for the guns that they own.
He's standing before a packed house, but it's a house of God divided between its own Tinley Park parishioners, many members of the Illinois State Rifle Association who've come from all over, and those who've lost loved ones to gun violence in Chicago, who also found themselves heckled by those who demand the right to bear arms.
Remember, it's not even the gun goobers' church. They came slithering out from the byways and highways and corners and crannies and crevices of the mostly rural part of Illinois to attend a service to which they were not, a community meeting to which they were not even invited. This is your gun goober. Classic. They have no respect for anyone's rights except the rights that they perceive to have themselves, to gun themselves up and make themselves as dangerous to the rest of us as possible. They're law-abiding! Yeah, so was Leighton Marchetta until he decided to take his law-abiding freedom protecting Second Amendment remedy and take a couple of pot shots at the Georgia State Police. Luckily, he may live to advise others not to do what he done. Yeah, I know. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out that Wolverines just ain't the same without the reverb. But John Fox has been very busy, and, well, I ain't exactly living a life of indolent boredom. And I got to figure out how to get the one-button reverb going on this thing. Just gotta. Anyway, back to the WGN coverage.
This is an American problem, and America must address it. If we care about what's going on overseas, we better care about what's going on in the streets of America.
You know, that's the kind of thing that'll get a priest dead real quick.
You won't take away my guns. I think you need to be shot. Enemy of freedom.
You worship some sort of sissy Jesus. My Jesus had an AR-15 and was ready to go and raise some hell. Didn't he say that? Take up thy AR-15 and follow me. Fucking gun owners.
Worth mentioning, many well-informed and even-tempered members of the National Rifle Association also here this evening who spoke to us and told us quite calmly they don't like being told they have blood on their hands as they were here this evening.
Well, too damn bad, Illinois State Rifle Association members. You do have blood on your hands. Because for as long as you argue that everybody needs a gun, then the problems are going to persist. And by the way, I find it interesting that the on-the-scene eyewitness WGN Team News Coverage Live reporter felt it even necessary to include that in his report. What? Was there a member of the Illinois State Rifle Association off camera with a gun pointed at him? You better say that we're nice! You say we don't appreciate people saying we got blood on our hands because we got blood on our hands. They don't appreciate it. Their little fifis is done being hurted. Because they ain't got no connection to all that gun violence. I mean, they's just sitting at home, protecting freedom. They ain't no gangbangers. They ain't been involved in no drive-bys. See, that's the thing. These people with these really, really deadly instrumentalities don't have a hell of a lot of brain power. They can't comprehend the linkage between a country that lets them have all the guns that they want with the fact that if they can have all the guns they want, so can everybody else. Stupid.
A call to action as well from Father Flager for parishioners to go out and lobby state and federal lawmakers to ban assault-style weapons and high-capacity magazines. That may have brought on the biggest jeers of all. Live in Tinley Park, Tom Negevin, WGN News.
All right.
Oh, how about that? That brought on the biggest jeers of all. No, because I can't protect my family, and my home is my castle, and I can't protect it. Unless I got an AR-15 with a 100-round clip. See, I don't shoot my gun very good, and I might only get him with one round, but I get him. So, just to be clear, let's make it absolutely crystal. The Iowa State Rifle Association and its parent owner, the National Rifle Association, is, as usual, as has ever been the case, completely content with little children being gunned down in the streets as long as the trade-out for that is that they get to have more guns for their paranoid fantasies. If tomorrow all the things I had was took from me, except my guns, America... Hoo-ah. No, don't worry. I will not play Lee Greenwood. Fear not. Friday on the front porch. Lots of stuff. Don't worry. It's not just Illinois. It's not just Arkansas. It's not just Georgia. How's about Michigan? Yeah. You're familiar with the hashtag by now. It is, it's become ubiquitous. Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. Enter Joe Judnick, who is a candidate for Detroit City Council. Joe Judnick probably is what you would call a racist. The Detroit News reports that candidate Judnick took to his Facebook page and said, "Without a doubt, it is blacks wanting to kill cops. My advice," and of course he spells it A-D-V-I-S-E, "my advice to all police, when there is any doubt, shoot." Joe Judnick's in the butchering and taxidermy business. He's past president of the Andover Heights Condominium Association. Sounds like a real top-notch little teabagger, because he says if he is elected, he's going to personally cut the pay of city administrators, fight blight, bring blue-collar jobs back to the city, and restore city services and vote only for balanced budgets. Yeah, really? He's putting forth the old shoot first and ask questions later argument. He's part of a little cabal with another politician by the name of Paul Smith, who's been running around listening to his inner Islamophobe. Murka. And Murka means freedom. Freedom to be mean and hateful and stupid. So, he's upset about being associated with Paul Smith. There's another Facebook group called Paul Smith and His Cronies. And Judnick didn't take kindly to being included in the cronies part. And he said, "Oh, nice try. Hide behind your computer and paint me with your racist brush. You need to go back to school and learn to read. I said to all police, shoot who? When an officer kills someone in self-defense, I don't think skin color matters to him. Would it to you? We don't have this problem in Sterling Heights. We don't have mobs of teenagers surrounding our police. We don't have gangs here. We have police that we know of driving while very, very drunk. I guess my definition of if any doubt would be Officer Wilson. Remember him?" The Paul Smith he's accused of being a lackey of or crony of. Yeah, you may remember this image. It was 2009 when there was a teabagger rally, and Paul Smith was running around with a sign that showed President Obama with a spear driven through his skull. Back during the great kerfuffle over the Ground Zero Mosque, which wasn't a mosque and it wasn't at Ground Zero, Paul Smith said, "Let them fill it up with 400,000 raghead Muslims. Then we can crash a radio control 747 into it and roast the bastards." It's just a melting pot. That's what it is. It's a melting pot. Because freedom. Like I said, we got a lot to work with this evening. Because as long as there's Republicans, there's going to be stupid. And we apparently have lots of Republicans. And, into the bargain, lots of stupid. Fun, fun, fun. And, of course, as we move toward the top of the hour, and Friday on the front porch, it's worth remembering that as part of the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, you can bring just about anything you want to the table, and we will consider it. Remember, if you've never participated and you'd like to, send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, Sparky Dunc, on Skype, and you will be part of the process. Lickety-split. Okay, so we took a little ride to Michigan. We've been in Illinois, been in Georgia, been in Arkansas. How's about Iowa way? Yeah. Now, it all kind of stands, it just sort of goes almost without saying that there's going to be a lot of Iowa way stories for the next year. Well, June 6th, okay, 7 months. As the clown train circles its way, serpentine, really, Sheldon Serpentine, through Iowa. And every weirdo, right-wing, white-wing, earth or death or ninth or tenth or bagger, booger, eater, bircher, Republican with a crazy idea is going to have it heard in Iowa. Enter Jan Mikkelsen. I have no idea who Jan Mikkelsen is. They are apparently Iowa-based radio personalities. The Iowa caucuses happen on February the 1st, by the way. So, yeah, we're looking at about 7 months. It was a week ago when Jan Mikkelsen had Pastor Brother Governor Diabetes Snake Oil Salesman Presidential Candidate Mike Huckabee on the program. He's also had, all the way from Smoldering Chode, the family plantation, Senator Lindsey Graham, and Lindsey, being a South Carolinian, there are some parts of this country where the Civil War is not history, but news, because they still haven't ended it. In the course of discussing the Iraq, such as, with Senator Lindsey Graham Cracker, this Jan Mikkelsen person took umbrage when Senator Graham, mentioned the Iraq and the Civil War. Get the hockey puck.
If the Americans are going to be the highway patrol to provide security for Iraq,
the glue,
as soon as we're going to be gone, it's all going to fall apart again.
Well, here's what happened in our own country. Within 100 years, we had a civil war among ourselves. We had a war with Canada and Mexico.
Oh, no, I don't consider the North amongst ourselves.
Okay. Yeah,
right. And you mentioned...
I can't go down that road. I'm all for the Union.
Really? It's 2015. Civil War's been over for 150 years, kinda. And a guy in Iowa, a I got to be careful or that little fife and drum corps will start playing in the background just like it done with Mr. Douglas on Green Acres. What? The Iowa straw poll's been canceled? Perish the thought. Well, maybe all that graft and corruption had something to do with it the last time through. But anyway, it's 150 years since the Civil War ended, and a radio blatherer in Iowa, which participated in the Civil War as the North, Jan Mikkelsen, doesn't consider the North to be us in Iowa. I can imagine that Barbie and Carol and no small amount of the rest of our Iowa and former Iowa contingencies are engaged in some creative furniture kicking right now. Greg's probably kicking the bejesus out of a Chippendale table leg, even as we speak. I can't help it. I gotta hear that again.
We're at a war with Canada and Mexico.
Oh, no, I don't consider the North amongst ourselves.
Okay.
I don't consider the North amongst ourselves. Now, what you'll find, this is another one of those G.I. Miss Bill moments. We're going to be remembering you for a long time, Bill Miller. The minute those words were out of this dipshit's mouth, the stress line would have already been ringing by now. And the incredulity in Bill Miller's voice would have been, it probably would have made cats howl. Because see, as Bill would have told us, quite expertly, if you go to places that have Civil War cemeteries, places like Shiloh, where in the spring of 1862, over the course of 2 days, this country found out what a bloody affair it was in for. Where, on the first day of Shiloh, there were more casualties than the United States had experienced in the Revolution, the War of 1812, and the Mexican War taken all together. There's a great big, I don't know if it's granite or marble or maybe just concrete, but there's a great big monument there, and all it says is Iowa. There's another one, and all it says is Wisconsin. And another one that says Minnesota. And another one that says Illinois. Because those are where the Union soldiers came from who stopped the Confederacy in their tracks that day at a little place called Pittsburgh Landing. That's the riverbank, and not far from that is a little meeting house called Shiloh Church. Shiloh being another one of those Old Testament words. Wouldn't be surprised if it didn't bear some cognate kinship with Shalom. Something about peace. The goddess of irony worked a lot of those out during the Civil War. But it was Iowa boys who had probably never been further than the county seat when Abraham Lincoln issued the call that the Union must at all costs be preserved. Maybe they were first generation, second generation, third generation at best, immigrants. And they left their cornfields. And they kissed mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and sweethearts goodbye. And they marched away. And many of them have spent the last 150 years interred beneath the dirt of West Tennessee. Those are the Iowans with whom Jan Mikkelsen feels no kinship. Because see, back in 1861, a union that had a hostile nation on its southern border in the form of the Confederacy would have been perpetually at risk. Bleeding Kansas had already taught the lesson of how the slaveholders would behave. Their descendants are behaving very similarly in churches in Tinley Park, Illinois. They did it last night. What a community wants doesn't matter. What the thugs want is all that matters, and the slave-owning society was, without a doubt, a gang of thugs. Here, beyond the ones who spent the rest of their time beneath the clay of West Tennessee, some made it home. A note from Carol. Our second great-grandpappy fought for the Union, the Iowa 39th Infantry. He left his 9-month pregnant bride to fight for the Union, and I'm a proud goddamned Yankee. He met his child for the first time when she was 4 years old. That's the North which this Jan Mikkelsen right-wing two-legged turd wants no communion. Notice the uncomfortable laugh of Lindsey Graham. Oh, I'm for the Union all the way. Wonder if maybe they threatened to string up one of the old Graham forebears, and maybe the lesson stuck. Go back.
Else, we're at war with Canada and Mexico.
Oh, no, I don't consider the North amongst ourselves.
Okay. Yeah.
And you mentioned...
I can't go down that road.
I'm
all for the Union.
And you mentioned capturing territory. I'm considering Sumter. Sumter was South Carolinian territory.
Okay.
And you were invaded.
Okay.
Pretty much like the Russians are invading the Ukraine.
I am.
You got that? Yeah, yeah. When the boys from the Citadel, under the direction of Pierre-Gustave Touton Beauregard, decided to start lobbing cannon shells at a U.S. military installation, a member of the United States, which South Carolina was, that was recapturing territory. Because somehow or another a fort that had existed for years represented a Union invasion of South Carolina, just like the Russians are invading the Ukraine. I got a question. And it's kind of the opposite of Jan Mikkelsen's. How are we supposed to consider this man an American? I mean, when we send our military off to godforsaken foreign hell holes like Iraq and Afghanistan to fight for Merca, they're fighting for that? Really? Beggar's belief. I wonder if you gave Jan Nicholson the chance to visit the Shiloh Battlefield Park. I wonder if he'd dredge up a big old lung oyster loogie and fling it all over the Iowa Monument. Because, you know, it's the North. Great obsequy was done to those who fell at Shiloh. The markers are laid out row on row of whatever was left of as many as they could bury. Names, home states, rank. They took the Southerners and just gathered them all together and buried them in a common trench. I used to think that was kind of brutal because I was raised in the South. I have since matured in my estimation. And were it not for the issues of sanitation that attended and all have always attended armies on the march, I've come to the conclusion they should have been left out on the ground to have their bones picked by the buzzards and then bleached by the sun. Because I mean that way. I guess there are some who think that I'm kidding when I talk about a cold civil war. I'm not. It's real. And some of these dumb bastards are trying to get it hot again. And who knows but one of these days they'll succeed when they try to secede. And sadly and dangerously, there are a lot of fools on our side who say, "Well, hell, I think it's about time we let them southern states just go to hell with them. Let them go be their own country. Because that's going to work out so well when they figure out everything that they don't have and decide to just come and take it from them that do. Because that's how they behave. That's what they're like. You cannot even sit down in your community parish church and feel safe that a bunch of uninvited gun thugs aren't going to invade that space deemed by believers to be sacred. So that's where we find ourselves as we wrap up the first hour, the filibuster of this Friday on the front porch of the 12th of June, 2015. We'll be firing up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable in fairly short order. You're invited to participate. Contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, or to get in via the telephone, the stress line, 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. So we'll take a little break and come back. By the way, thanks to Texas Tea, we are now only $130 away from the evening's fundraising goal. Thank you very, very kindly, Jack and Texas Tea, getting us well on the way this evening. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. That was almost too easy. Neil Young, Southern man, but delightfully apropos. No? Yes. It is Friday on the front porch, and thanks going out to John. Thank you very kindly, John. We are now only $110 away from reaching the evening's fundraising goal. It makes a really, really big difference to be able to stay even and maybe even sometimes get a day or so out in front in keeping all of this going. Let's see. Next week's bills are, it's about $1,000. Oh, well. Being Friday on the front porch, it's time to fire up the Horn Molloy Skype chat group and the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. Good evening, Sparky. Oh, sorry. My bad. Still getting used to where the buttons are. Good evening, Sparky.
Oh, okay. Should I start over again?
Yeah, start over again. All better now.
I got a temperature correction for you. It's 107.4 degrees right now.
Well, I feel like
outside.
I feel like a real wimp after last night then. You know, I was just sitting here in 95.
Yeah, but you got the humidity. There's only 10% humidity today. It's drier than a bone.
Well, and it has dropped to a bearable 83 now in here.
Mm-hmm. Remember last time I told you my air conditioner wouldn't work because of that damn PG&E box?
Right.
Well, I got that situation resolved now, and that box can rot on that air conditioner forever as far as I'm concerned. I even told the PG&E guy that called me on the phone. Because he told me it was a voluntary program that my parents signed up for years ago, and only got like a $50 credit when they first signed up for it.
So you said, I'm done volunteering?
Yeah, I said. He just said, okay, we'll make an appointment to come take it off your compressor unit. It's outside, you know, on the ground. And I said, I just told him on the phone, I said, that thing can rot on there as far as I'm concerned. As long as that thing works, that's all I care about. Because it's cool, 76 degrees in here.
Oh, of course, devoutly to be wished. Of course, all I have to do is wait for winter, and it'll be a delightful 44.
But, I mean, PG&E will love me this month. I mean, the bill. Because this heat wave doesn't seem to want to break. It's just going to go on for days. We did have one little day off the other day. It cooled down.
Forgive me, Sparky, but I don't think you get to refer to them anymore as heat waves. I think it's just June.
No, we've always had heat waves like this.
But they used to come and go. I have a feeling going forward, it's just going to be how it is.
Well, I will see if there's no break in it or, you know, if it's just... At least it's not August. August is when we really get into the triple digits.
Well, hell, but with climate change come August, you may get snow.
Now, that would be something.
Well, get an early start on the snowpack. It would probably be welcome.
Well, Mount Shasta still has snow on it. Lassen's, it's getting a little iffy up there. There's still some streaks.
Well, we've got a nice little gathering this evening. Before I screw up and forget anything, let me run over to the stress line and say hello to Kevin.
Good evening.
How are you?
Good. Fairly well, anyway. The story about the blind black man obviously troubled me. Those devices that the cop was so worried about that tell the time are quite indistinguishable, or distinguishable, I guess you could say, from a gun. Looks nothing like a gun, talks like a watch, like the one I've got on.
Well, I mean, does it have a big handle like a billy club or something?
No. If it's what I'm thinking of, the basic pocket watch model of the wristwatch I've got on, it is nothing that could be thought of as being a weapon. And it just, you know, the cop was doing the famous CYA, you know, I was in fear for my life because I saw this black thing, and I'm talking about the watch, clock, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll add on to that. I'm totally blind. I've been at bus stops before like that man was. You can't act like you're a threat to anyone. You're blind, for crying out loud. You know, you're there. You're the one that is worried about getting robbed or assaulted, not the one doing the robbing and assaulting. And it just, you know, it's just so sad on so many levels that we've got policemen that are so in fear for their lives that they've got to take down a blind man in the way they did without just simply walking up to him and asking him what he's doing. You know, most blind people are fairly obvious that they're blind, especially if they've got the white cane held out in front of them. So that's my rant for the day. But it just, you know, it's one more of those stories along the way about how minorities are treated, and in this case, the poor guy with the darker skin color happened to be in two of them, black and blind. And, you know, it's troubling to say the least. And you would think the chief of that department, instead of standing by the cop, would be having the cop in for a friendly chat.
Well, no, the Little Rock Police Department says an investigation is ongoing. And, of course, they can't comment on an investigation that's ongoing because it's a personnel matter.
Yeah, because we never can comment on personnel matters when it has to do with a governmental agency such as the police, because we might invade the policeman's privacy, but the black guy sitting in the hospital with the injured back, it's okay to invade his privacy.
Well, see, and wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall in the squad room where, when the cop says, "Honest to God, Daddy, I thought he was going to beat the shit out of me." Really, Cletus? Really? You thought the blind man was going to beat the shit out of you with your own handcuff? Is that what you're saying? Well, Daddy, he was black.
Yep.
Right. Hey, I mean, Kevin, I think part of the problem is that the police, by virtue of knowing that so many police officers abuse so many Americans every day, and knowing that the American people know how abusive the police can be, they have become afraid. It's the same,
yep.
You know, it's the same syndrome that attended slave ownership.
Yep.
You got all these people that you ostensibly own, and you've got all the guns and all the power, but you know that they hate you.
Yep.
Witness a case out of here in West Virginia. There's a West Virginia senior trooper by the name of Trooper Tupper. Not kidding. Trooper Tupper used to be in the Mingo County, West Virginia area, where he made a practice of being deliberately cruel to people, especially people who were weak and people who were unable to fight back. After a while, instead of being seconded or cashiered, rather, discharged, they sent him to the Princeton, West Virginia detachment. So, a fella who named Michael Lowry, who was not a West Virginian, I don't think, and who is alleged to have been drinking and had been panhandling at the local Walmart, got mouthy with Trooper Tupper. Lowry is wanted in Georgia for a serious run-in with law enforcement, by the way. He's been charged, apparently he's got an attitude about the police. And so when the cop, when Trooper Tupper came over to start haranguing him for panhandling and putting the touch on people for money going in and out of Walmart, Michael Lowry, you know those little compact batons that they carry, which I guess is what, and the reason I thought of this is, I guess that's what the cops in Little Rock thought that Mr. Wilson had in his pocket, but it turned out to be a clock for the blind. Well, Michael Lowry took the baton from Trooper Tupper and beat him soundly about the head and shoulders. Beat the shit out of him.
Yep.
And eventually, and local people came to his rescue. People that on any given Friday night, Trooper Tupper would have had happily beaten the shit out of.
Yep.
Sergeant A.P. Christian, really, of the West Virginia State Police, said, "We greatly appreciate it. We appreciate all the help we can get. We're only as good as the community that we serve. Yesterday showed that the people really care. And when we need their backs, they're there for us. And then we're there for them also when they need a good beating about the head and shoulders."
Yep.
So Lowry's been charged with felony malicious assault, disorderly conduct, and obstructing and battery on a police officer. He's in the Southern Regional Jail on bond of $50,000, probably awaiting extradition to Georgia. And I'm not offering a defense of this guy. He was an asshole, and a violent asshole into the bargain. But I think it is a telling little tableau of the nature of the country we live in now. Let's run over and check in with some more of the Skype group. Good evening, Rick.
Hey, good evening, Bob. How are you?
I'm pretty good, I think. How about you?
I am doing pretty well. I'm doing pretty well. Boy, I tell you, these stories are crazy. You know, it's like I was just writing in on the chat here that when are we going to get rid of these scaredy cat cops, you know, that just abuse the public and especially the most vulnerable members of it, you know?
Unfortunately, I think the answer, Rick, is never. Because,
yeah.
Because we let the police police the police.
There you go. That's right.
There should be an independent administrative body nationwide, in of which the police live in mortal dread, ready to come down on them at a minute's notice. That the blue omerta can't touch.
There you go. Sort of like maybe the court in the movie Captain Dread. I don't know if you remember that. That was sort of one of the Class B science fiction movies with Stallone.
Oh, Judge Dread? I am the law.
Yeah. Somewhat entertaining anyway, you know. But I think we're getting some of our cojones back a little bit. I don't know if you saw the email I sent to you. Maybe an hour and a half before your show about the D.C. Circuit decision on the Military Commissions Act?
Yes.
Yeah, and it's kind of complicated, but essentially they've cut back on the ability of the military commissions to try cases that state violations of law that aren't illegal under international law. So, you know, it was a 2-1 decision, and strangely, the judge that wrote the opinion is the what we call the West Coast female Clarence Thomas, Janice Brown.
Oh dear God!
I don't know if you're familiar with her.
The Maoist who became a right winger.
Right. Basically, Clarence with the dress, and she was a justice of the California Superior Court or Supreme Court. And Bush, the shrub, basically appointed her to the D.C. Circuit, and she was filibustered for a long time. And then finally, there was a deal made, and a bunch of appointments were approved. And so she was one of them.
Yeah, she was. Yeah, she was part of the cabal of Bush appointees over whom the Democratic majority in the Senate folded like a cheap suit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly, like the Senate always does, you know? The so-called Democrats in the Senate, you know? I'm sure we're going to talk about the TPP. I don't know if you did in the first part of your show yet, but I'm sure other folks would probably want to talk about that.
Yeah, I thought it might come up during the front porch conversation. And that's precisely. Yeah. What I
so.
Did.
So let me have someone else chime in here. I don't want to monopolize Rick Bobster things here. So.
All right. Well, good evening to Carol in Australia. Good morning.
Hi, Bob. Hi. Yes, it is morning. I'm just having my morning coffee.
Lovely.
Yep. It's amazing to me that after how many years this country's been here, we're still dealing with the same issue that we started with. And the whole race slavery thing. I avoided the South religiously, so to speak, for many years, but I did spend about 5 years in Western Florida when my mother was not well, and I used to get into arguments with people who also were not from the South but had been living there and started a business there, and I would say to them over a couple glasses of wine, you know, I said, the war never ended. The Civil War never ended. They're still fighting it. They still think they're going to win, and these were relatively educated people who I thought had some ability to see what was going on. And they would get into these pitched battles with me about how ridiculous that was and what a nasty thing to say, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, wow, it's so apparent. I don't understand why anybody avoids talking about it. And now everybody's talking about it.
About time.
And they just come right out and say it. I mean, you know, this little snide Lindsey Graham thing with yucking about, oh, yes, I'm completely, you know, behind the union. You know, the inference from the tone of voice and everything is that obviously we're not in behind the union, and obviously the war is not over. And the good guys will win eventually because we're white. And they just let it, they're letting it all hang out now. I think when the psychopaths really feel like they don't get any pushback, then they go even further, each time a little bit further with their outrageous statements.
I mean, I grew up with this stuff. I mean, you talk about West Florida. That's actually just South Alabama when you get right down to it, or South Georgia. The flag's different, but the attitude's the same. But it's part and parcel of the election of Barack Obama to the presidency. It has driven what had been nascent racism into a state of glaring obviousness, and his election created some sort of pass for the racists to let it all hang out. And I grew up, like I said, growing up in the South, I grew up seeing little vanity tags on the front bumpers that showed a grizzled old Confederate veteran with the stars and the Confederate battle flag over his shoulder, and it said, "Forget Hail."
Mm-hmm.
That one was about as popular as the one that said, "Eat more possum, delicious with sweet taters." But that "Forget Hail" thing, I grew up here, and it wasn't said entirely jokingly. The South will rise again.
Yeah, I know most of the Northerners that I talked to in Florida really thought that that was just kind of like, you know, don't tread on me or some of the other stupid-ass statements that people make that make it sound like they're part of a group that has a brain. They really thought that it was a joke. And yet they were mimicking the same behavior that we condemn, which is having black employees that they paid less to because they just don't need it. or they're just going to waste it. I actually heard somebody that I thought was a friend say that, you know, if we pay them more, they're just going to get more drunk. And I looked at them like, my God, what year is this?
They're just going to spend it on the marijuanas.
Yeah, probably moonshine, though. That's what they really like, you know.
But, and that argument is to be found in other, for instance, take the idea of raising the minimum wage. I heard, and I'm not being particularly critical. It may be true within, because corporate America is corporate America. I heard the argument put forward that the problem with raising the minimum wage is that as soon as the minimum wage goes up, the price of all the goods will go up, so that the minimum wage increase will be eaten up in inflated retail prices. The argument being that the 1% are never going to absorb something like that within their own wealth. The thing is, it's a dangerous argument because it means that we might as well pay people next to nothing and charge them a little bit more than nothing for their goods, and it's all a zero sum game.
Yeah. It's also a very cruel way of looking at what we like to think of as progress. It's really cruel to say it's okay for us to progress, but it's not okay for you, which is what I saw when I was down there. It was, you know, this was like 1998, and I thought we were a fairly progressive country at that point. I think we were still under the delusion that the fall of the USSR was going to be some kind of peace dividend, and it wasn't even apparent yet in 1998 that, oh no, it's just going to be the beginning of another Cold War. There's no money in peace.
I remember thinking with the fall of the Berlin Wall, well, what are we going to do with all this defense money? And the answer became readily apparent: we're going to keep spending it on the defense industry. We'll find somebody to make us be scared enough to wet ourselves.
Well, that's the problem with not understanding psychopathy, is at that point, at least I was delusional enough to think that things would start working out and that things would calm down and we would actually move forward again. But I didn't understand how psychopathy works, and it's like there's never enough. There's never enough pain for other people. There's never enough bias against people to satisfy the emptiness that a psychopath has inside of them at their core. And the only way they seem to be able to fill it is with other people's grief. That's the only thing that seems to lift them up and make them feel better, which is the perversion of what human nature is supposed to be.
Well, exactly.
Well, I'm glad that I found a community here who seems to, you know, figure this out and start recognizing that we are really up against something that's inhuman in a way. And you will always lose to that kind of a lying presence unless you keep your wits about you and recognize what it is you're dealing with. Because if you ever give a psychopath a break, they will take your head off. I mean, they never use it to good effect. They always use it. It's like showing emotions to somebody who doesn't have a conscience just gives them another way to hurt you.
Well, true. True indeed. Let's check in. Is Tim just listening, or is he actually here?
I'm actually here.
Oh, wow. Cool, Tim. That's kind of unusual for this hour.
Yeah, I went to the doctor's earlier today, and I decided not to go to school. Thank goodness for Obamacare.
Thanks, Obama. Yeah. did I read earlier that you're having to do some hoop jumping to get on the plane for your UU meeting?
Yeah, because I lost my driver's license, so I got a temporary one, and then I checked with TSA, and they said, yeah, just bring whatever IDs you have, come a little early, they'll ask me some additional questions. But they said, we see no problem in you getting on. I'm like, cool, okay.
So how long does it take to get a new license?
Two to three weeks.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, also you have to remember that we California also has the new undocumented worker driver's license, so there's a lot more people signing up for driver's license now.
I know, but I'm just thinking when you go to the DMV in West Virginia, and I'm baffled to think that we might be better at something than California. You stand in line for 3 days, and then you get a number, and you wait for 6 more hours, and then they call your name, and you go get your photograph made, and then they
right.
and then they hand you a hot laminated, or well, it used to be laminated, but unless you want the federal government building driver's license, you're golden. They hand it to you, and you're gone.
Oh my gosh, that quick! So we just get like this piece of paper with a photo on it, the temporary driver's license, yada yada yada, and we have to wait till the driver's license comes in the mail.
So I mean,
does your driver's license have a computer strip on it?
I think so. Yeah.
No,
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I'm talking about West Virginia.
Oh yeah.
Oh okay, because I didn't think they can make those at our DMV.
Well, I mean, I'm trying to think back to when, you know, Ferg got his learners and stuff. It was done. And I got the special government building access license. I don't know what it means, but I got that, so it did take a couple of weeks to get to me, but they explained that on the form. You pay extra, and it's going to take longer to get to you.
Now, what does that give you?
I have no idea. All I know is it gave them an extra $15, but it was at the time when we were doing a lot of ache work, and consequently, we were in and out of government buildings a lot. And I thought, well, if this is going to make the process any easier, you know, spring the $15.
I mean, we could walk into a federal building in California and just show our driver's license, and said, okay, go on.
Well, it's been my experience too. I don't know what I paid for. I think I paid to be in a database I didn't want. And
maybe.
Now, given the fact that the Chinese have apparently hacked the name, address, and social security number and date of birth of every federal employee in the country, well, I don't feel so good.
Well, maybe they could start listening to the horn.
Absolutely. I, for one, welcome.
Yeah.
I for one, welcome our new overlords.
So the TSA, I thought it would be a pain in the ass, but they were accommodating. And I'm also finding out, you know, through my doctor that, you know, right now I can't walk, and I'm taking a bunch of stuff and have crutches. So my doctor's trying to find me ways so I could get on the jet and travel around in Portland as a disabled person without a whole lot of, I don't know. I could probably get a wheelchair for free.
Well, if it's not being too personal, what did you do to yourself?
Well, 6 years ago, I lifted up. I was helping my parents, you know, being the good firstborn son.
Yes.
I lifted my mom's bookcase and weighed about 600 pounds, and I felt a pop in my leg, my groin area, and I thought it was a hernia, but then.
But you being a guy, it turned out to be a hemnia? I'm sorry, I couldn't resist.
No, it was just a pull. And then about 6 weeks ago, I felt the same pull again. I couldn't walk anymore.
Oh,
so
hell.
Is
it nerve related, or?
They don't know. That's why I'm going to have x-rays taken next week, well, Monday. To see if it's either the muscle or the bone. If it's the bone, it's probably dislocated, you know, leg. If it's the muscle, it's just a strain. I just hope I don't need surgery.
So when do you find out?
The x-ray is going to be on Monday, and they said a few days after that, when the doctors get the thingamajig, you know, the results, they'll tell me. And I don't have to pay a single penny.
Yay, what is it? Medi-Cal.
Yeah. That's our version of Medicaid.
Right.
Bob.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. Yes, Kevin.
I'm going to go ahead and drop off the phone line. I don't know if it's my line, your line, what, but I'm having a real hard time understanding the conversation. I just went back to the radio stream, and I can hear it pretty well on there, but on the phone, it's really hard to understand. So I'm going to drop off and let somebody else call in.
Well, is it both sides of the conversation, Kevin, or just me?
Can you hear me?
It's everybody. It's kind of like it's not muffled, but it's close to that. It's just really
it's
hard.
It's both sides, and it's an echo.
Well, that's very strange.
About a 10-second delay.
See, I've got none of that on this end.
Neither do I.
Now you sound good. No, I hear the echo now. I hear myself talking what I just said 10 seconds ago now.
The delay part may be on your end, Rick.
Yeah, I'm not hearing any delay. I'm just having trouble understanding what's being said, almost like if you had the volume turned up too loud on a headphone, you would have trouble understanding what's being said.
Oh, so it's overdriven?
Yeah, kind of that describes it, especially when Carol was talking, but it's really with everybody. And I went back to the radio stream, like I said, and I can understand it fine on the computer stream. I'm just having trouble hearing it on the phone. So, So I'll let someone else call in and see if it's the same problem.
Okay, well, I'm sitting here playing randomly with a bunch of knobs. Maybe I'll get it right somewhere along the way.
Well, it sounds a little bit better now, but,
I'm wondering maybe if the send was too hot to the phone.
Possible. Carol, speak up here for a minute. Let me hear what you sound like. Because I really noticed it with you.
Hey Bob.
Just a second, Sparky. Can you give us a check 1-2, Carol?
Check. 1-2.
He's clear.
Yeah, now she sounds a whole lot better.
Okay. Well, maybe I tweaked something right. Yes, Sparky.
Yeah, I was only hearing it when you were talking.
That's bizarre.
So it was
you sound fine. Now, Kevin's getting, volume's getting lower.
I've been what?
Yeah, you're low, Kevin.
Huh.
Strange. Strange indeed. All right, well, in the chat room, Stockton Larry, Lib Talker plays with his knobs. Yeah.
Well, at either rate, I need to give somebody else a chance to call in on the stress line, so I've got enough stress for one week anyway.
All right.
How you sound now, though? Voice is coming through clear now.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, you have yourself a very good weekend, and we'll see if anybody else wants to jump in on the stress line.
Bye, right. Kevin.
Have a good evening, Kevin.
Have a good week.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
See you, Kevin.
Agent Fred, darn you.
No, I think this is more of an Agent Bob, you incompetent issue.
Well,
I mean, this is what happens when you're the engineer call screener. Yeah.
You mean to say you can't do it all simultaneously, Bob? Come on.
You're DJ?
No, I do it all simultaneously, Rick. I apparently just don't do it well.
No, I'm playing. I can only do one thing at a time, so. Or a couple things at a time, so I don't envy your job.
Well, most of the time it's not so bad. When it's 95 degrees in here, it becomes, as I found out last night, impossible.
And you had humidities to match, probably, right?
Oh yeah, it was like walking down the driveway. It was like swimming.
Oh my God!
It's like Southeast Asia weather.
Yeah.
I'm complaining about 75 degrees at 65% humidity.
Yeah, it's great here in L.A. I don't really want to rub it in. I wrote something in that it's only maybe 80 degrees on the west side at the most, but, you know, hey. Sparky, you got a lot hotter weather than we do. Like, you're 25 degrees warmer than we are today.
Well, that's not unusual.
No, it's not, but usually the gap is maybe only 10 or 15 degrees at the most, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he has no humidity, though. So that's bearable.
Yeah, well, I don't know. It's, you know, I can never live in Arizona, you know?
That low humidity stuff I've only experienced a couple of times and just blew my mind because I'm being a bigger guy. I'm prone to perspire. And it was weird. Just as quick as a couple of little drops would pop out on my forehead, they were gone, just sucked up into the desert air.
Hey, Bob, if you need something to not perspire, I've got, like, something at home that I sometimes use because I tend to sweat like a pig, like, especially after working out. And so I take this thing, and I don't, like, lose any moisture. It's really weird, you know?
What is it?
I'm trying to remember what it's called.
I mean, is it a supplement or a machine?
No, it's a drug. It's a drug.
Oh.
Yeah. It's actually very, you know, it's been around a long time. I'll have to text it to you.
I didn't even know there was such a thing. Back when I was a young and aspiring actor, they would have to reapply my makeup about, you know, after every scene.
Wow.
There was no amount of powder that could glue it to my face.
Wow. Have you always been on the stocky end then?
Not particularly. I mean, back in those days, Jesus, 6'2 and 190.
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah.
That's
perfect weight.
But, you know, expose me to any heat at all and I just start melting. Remember, I get third degree sunburns under the refrigerator bulb.
That's right.
I mean, if I ever do come to Southern California, I'm going to have to dress like a Bedouin sheik, you know, flowing robes and everything.
Aren't you coming in mid-July?
Well, we're still working on it, so. Yeah, we're working on it.
Good. Maybe the three of us can hook up, me, you, and Tim.
Oh, I hope there's a whole lot more of us can hook up.
Well, I'm saying just among the folks right here, but yeah, more people than that, obviously, you know.
I think it would be great fun to do a Friday on the front porch, actually on a front porch somewhere.
Oh, well, there you go. Well, you can do it at my house if you want. As long as the elevation doesn't affect it, I'm about maybe 2,000 feet up.
Oh, please, I'm at 1,500 feet right now.
Oh, really? Okay. Surprised against the swarm for you up there.
Oh, no, this is, Sparky said a few minutes ago, we have humidity here like Southeast Asia. And a new elision of, I live in Appalachia.
There you go.
Everything but the water buffaloes.
Well, I guess it's better than living in West Virginia, Stan. I mean, as far as the names go, right?
It is what it is, you know.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh. You know where we should take Bob? Zankow Chicken.
What's it called? Zankow Chicken?
Yeah, in Glendale.
Oh, you know, I don't know that. I'm up for it. What is it? Thai chicken or what is it?
No, it's I think it's what was it? It's rotisserie chicken.
Oh.
Oh, it is good, but it's I forgot where it's from. Middle East somewhere. Lebanese, I think, but it is good. The chicken, when you bite into it, melts in your mouth.
Oh.
Mm.
It is good. We should send them there. If you need to fly it on the front porch at
I've got a couple of, I mean, apart from doing the work that I actually plan to do on getting out there, there is one other thing, and I've been haranguing Greg down in San Diego about it for over a year now. Apparently there is one little Mexican restaurant somewhere in the San Diego area where they import every day fresh pulque.
Ooh.
And I just want to try it once to say I have. Because, you know, that's the ancient fermented beverage of the Uitlatoani and the Papilton nobles of the ancient Mexica.
Is that corn based or maize based or what is that, Bob?
Magway. It's fermented cactus sap.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You want to get blitzed.
Hmm. Well, maybe you could have a little peyote with that as well, Bob.
No, let's don't say we didn't.
It is a Southwest.
I retired from psychedelics a long while back, having decided that my life was weird enough and I didn't need the visual extras.
There you go.
Well, when in Rome goes only so far. I draw the line. I draw the line at, you know, when in Rome hallucinate like the Romans do. Sorry, no.
There you go, Bob.
I mean, it's a full time job just to keep from, you know, climbing the tree and howling like a monkey.
We do live in a crazy world, and especially a crazy country.
Oh yeah, we do. I mean, I can't imagine. I really cannot imagine, because I tried when I first read the story. I tried to imagine sitting there in a church pew, being harangued by a bunch of fat, pasty-faced, doughy white people who think their guns are more important than the community's children's lives. I don't know how. Maybe it has something to do with the power of faith or the power of the church or the authority of the church or the ability of the church to constrain more intemperate behavior. But I don't know how those people didn't go over and just beat the ever-loving shit out of those ISRA people, you know, the Illinois State Rifle Association. I mean, I don't know how they didn't stomp them and stack their bodies like damn cordwood coming into a church meeting to harangue the victims of gun violence. Yeah, what a bunch of barbarians! What a bunch
totally.
Of goons!
Totally. I mean, I had the sense that, like, for example, they had gun problems in Serbia, because we've got one of our clerical staff here is from Serbia originally, and she said, "Oh no, it's not at all like that. It's much, you know, we don't have anywhere near the gun violence they have in America. You guys are just, you know, crazy."
Yeah, I mean, hey, did you bring your guns with you? Well, no. Good, I brought a ball bat. You know, whack!
And
I'm the nonviolent guy. But it's an everyday job to maintain that kind of an attitude. And when you got people looking at you going, "Yeah, but what about my guns? I mean, your kid's already dead, but my guns is real."
Yeah. It's crazy. I mean, you know, those people are just as bad as the Westboro Baptist Church protesting at funerals of, you know, service people saying that their sons died because, you know, God hates fags, you know?
Yeah. Although people have begun to figure out how to push back. I saw where, Gandalf and Dumbledore got married outside, across the street from Westboro Baptist the other day in a mock ceremony.
Oh, cool. Cool. Hey, I think your prayers worked. They weren't precatory either. Greg is, I think, on the call, Bob.
Oh, no, that's just conjuring. Hey, Greg. Oh, I saw him pop in. Maybe he's reaching madly for the unmute button. I don't know.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Greg.
How you guys doing?
Did you hear me taking your name in vain?
I sure did.
Yeah, because it's only a year and we still don't have the Pulque report. What, are you walking to the restaurant?
Oh,
Oh, we got an echo problem on your end, too?
I'm hearing it multiple seconds late.
That's bizarre.
It ain't me. I'm muted.
No, see, usually when there's an echo, I'll see a light flashing somewhere.
Hey, Greg, did you turn off your radio feed?
Oh, you might be right, Duncan.
Greg!
I know, it's me. There it is.
All better now?
All better now.
Excellent.
So, Bob, that restaurant?
Yeah.
It's only 5 miles from my house.
Well, I know, but after a year, I figure you must be walking one step per day.
I have to get somebody to go with me who's brave enough to drink that stuff.
Oh, for pity's sake.
I know. I'll find somebody. We'll go do it.
All right. I just want to report back, you know, if I need to just put a Sharpie line through that line on the bucket list, that's fine. But you know, if I get out that way, by God, I'll be the person who goes with you. How's that?
You got it.
And let's see. We got Roger in the group as well this evening. Are you there, Roger?
Howdy.
Howdy indeed.
Managed to unmute a little more promptly this time.
Very good.
We're having heaven weather here in Minnesota right now. It's like just gorgeous. It's the weather we dream of. And it's a joy to enjoy it. It's tonight I'm going to go out and drive in a little. I bought a little old convertible, a 1987 Toyota Celica that looks beautiful and gets 40 miles a gallon. And I'm going to take the hair tie off my hair and let it get tangled in the wind in the moonlight.
I got to ask, Roger, what in God's name's going on in the background?
Oh, that was me making the wooden floor in my house creak. I'm very sorry.
Oh, that's okay. I thought maybe there was Friday night wrestling in Minnesota or something.
No, I will stop walking around. My floor has gotten quite loud with me walking around on it over the years, because I'm able to exert enough weight to cause it to creak pretty well. So I think it's just sick and tired of me, and it likes to groan a lot.
Thanks, Obama.
Yeah, it's all Obama's fault anyway. Creak, creak. Maybe I'll mute.
Well, so no humidity, moderate temperatures in Minnesota, and it's just a little slice of paradise. Hey,
well,
almost makes you forget the brutality of winter, doesn't it?
We get this kind of weather actually a good chunk of the year. It's sort of intermittent. We'll get some other kinds of weather, but then we can get weather like this where it's like 70, 75 degrees and maybe 35% humidity and just honey clear evenings. We get quite a bit of it. I mean, Minnesota's a great climate, but it's full-scale Louisiana bayou jungle part of the summer. We'll get 100% humidity and 100 degrees.
And mosquitoes and mosquitoes the size of pterodactyls.
Well, they spew so damn much poison around. We don't have as many mosquitoes as we used to. I remember clouds when I was a kid, but I'm most of the time here in the suburbs. I'm going up to my cabin in Wisconsin tonight, later, man, talk about mosquito clouds. They're there. And then there's a friend of mine calls the ticks in Wisconsin and Minnesota. We have a lot of the Lyme disease ticks here. And I think they discourage quite a bit of outdoor recreation. And he calls them the protectors because their presence suppresses human activity in the backwoods a little bit. A little bit. I wish it would do more of that, because us humans, we're just rapacious creatures. Rapacious. We should stay away from hallowed areas, which is everywhere, you know. In fact, it would be great if we would I don't know. Stop wrecking this planet, you know, or get off it or something. I'm a bit of an extremist.
Well, but so, thus far there is no planet B, so.
Yeah, well, let's see if we couldn't figure out how to be an enhancement to the biosphere instead of its main threat.
Well, I speaking of enhancement, Agnes and I were talking about a little bit of genetic news last night. I don't know quite how to feel about this, but Cornell University's genetics lab, in conjunction with some godforsaken corporation, is getting ready to release the first genetically engineered insect.
That sounds like a great idea.
Doesn't
what
it?
Could possibly go wrong? I don't see any possibility. Man, when man engineers things, we never have problems. I mean, come on.
It's a moth.
Maybe they're going to make Mothra.
Well, that may be what they wind up with, because it is a moth, and it's genetically engineered to have its young die in the larval stage, so that it will go out and mate with the other moths who are apparently creating some sort of problem, and then when they mate, the larva will die in the larval stage.
Are they doing this with gypsy moths?
No, the name, it's not the gypsy moth. It has a name. Stand by. Let me get a message to the boss and see if I can find out.
It sounds diabolical.
Okay.
They should come up with something to eliminate the bark beetle.
Well, I'm sure that's next. But the problem is that, and I don't know quite how to express this other than to say that the goddess of irony serves an evolutionary purpose. And so if you come up with something whose young die as larvae, then natural selection won't just probably kill them off, but instead they will begin to evolve some way of survival. And then you'll wind up with a bajillion moths you didn't want in the first place that you can't kill. Yay, we fixed the problem. I mean, it's the old Hawaii rodents, snakes, cats. You know, Hawaii rodents, snakes, mongoose. You know what I mean? And pretty soon, you've got an elephant problem, and you have to bring the mice back to get rid of the elephants.
I still wonder if they spray the planes as you're landing in Hawaii coming from Asia. That used to drive me nuts coming back from Okinawa in Thailand.
Well, it's a pretty closed ecosystem, so I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, see, Marty just sent a note and said, "Have these people not seen Jurassic Park? Nature will find a way." And by the way, he says, "You also forgot Australia and cane toads."
Say, Bob, I had a quick question for you. Yesterday or the day before, you were mentioning that big coal company, what was Massey Coal Company?
Massey got absorbed by Alpha.
Right, Alpha is what I was trying to think of. And you were saying that its stock is sharply attenuated in value. Are you sure that there's not just little corporation games going on back there that are shielding its assets and shifting its value out? Or is it beginning to become true that coal exploitation is literally starting to wind? Do you think it's going to go into death throes? Seriously.
Coal production is actually going to continue to rise through like 2035.
Right. That's what I'm worried about.
But what you're seeing, for instance, Alpha was, Alpha and before that Massey, was one of the leading producers of mountaintop removal coal. That's the egg they put. That's the basket they put all their eggs in.
Right.
Well, Appalachia's about tapped out, and they've been hit by fines and consent orders and things like that. And they're. I mean, no, I don't think it's a. I don't think it's a shell game to protect assets. Because one does not willingly get one's ass thrown off the New York Stock Exchange, which they are, I mean, they're on probation now. If within the next, I think, four months or so, if they can't get back up above a dollar a share, they're gone. They're just a penny stock.
And that's Alpha, the successor to Massey, right, Rob?
Right.
Okay.
Well,
but
it was my understanding.
Patriots gone back into bankruptcy. Arch is in trouble. Peabody not so much because they're working a lot of other areas. You know, they work out in the Powder River Basin. They're mining out of Australia. They're even in Mongolia, I think. But what we're seeing is that these particular companies working this particular model are in desperate trouble because their holdings aren't worth a damn anymore. But no, there's going to continue to be not just coal production, but increased coal production through about 2030. The question is, it doesn't have to be that way. If countries like China get serious about not burning coal anymore, then the market's going to fall completely to pieces.
Well, is it incorrect that right now, or just in this last year, the Interior Department signed a bunch more mountaintop removal leases?
Well,
like 30 of them?
Well, no, it's permitting. It's permitting. And
permits.
Yeah, there's new permits practically every day.
That shit has to stop.
One would think.
Speaking of stopping it, Bob, what's going on with ACAC? Because I saw some kind of I got an email from the Sierra Club saying they'd endorsed the ACAC, and I've seen it in the news in a couple other spots too.
Well, it's getting traction, it's getting momentum. We're still campaigning to see it introduced in the Senate by some heroic Democrat, or frankly, a coalition of a heroic Democrat and a heroic Republican. I mean. People who actually care about the people who live here, which necessarily means Shelley Moore and Joe Manchin are not going to be part of the process. We've seen an amazing thing take place. We're approaching, you know, the Credo petition that I was talking about?
Yeah.
We are approaching 200,000 signatures on that.
Whoa, that's great.
I mean, Credo puts out a lot of petitions. They haven't seen a lot of this before.
Hmm.
And I suspect that one of the reasons is because it's not just save the gay baby whales. There is a concrete mechanism contained within the petition for stopping mountaintop removal, to wit, this legislation.
Right, because they're never going to be able to certify that, you know, mining coal is safe for, you know, safe to human health, basically.
Yeah, and let's be clear on one thing. I'm not being mean here. I just want to be absolutely crystal clear on something. The Sierra Club has finally gotten unqualifiedly behind the ACAC. They support it. They want to see it passed. They're behind it. They are still not supporting the AIC campaign of the people who got the AIC Act in the first place. See, a couple of years ago, we were at our very best, eating rice and beans and living in a little basement apartment in D.C. and knocking on doors every blessed day, and going to meetings and explaining the problem and pushing. Well, that money's gone, and there isn't any money. So neither I nor my colleague Bo Webb nor any of the rest of us are doing that work now. Because while there is support for the legislation itself, There is no financial support for advancing the legislation. And that's,
well,
and you know, and that's not me being mean. That is simply a statement of fact.
Well, that's vital. You've got to have money to build the infrastructure and the movement, essentially. And hopefully your trip out to the West Coast, hopefully coming up soon, we can start to help you raise some funds for that the campaign.
Well, I hope so, because I mean it's amazing how much can be done with very little. As I've said before, if we could get 400 people at $10 a month. You know, there's a subscription button at ACAC.org, just like there is for the Horn. If we could get 400 people to click that little button that says $10 a month, it would be enough. It would be $4,000 for us to go back and have that crappy little apartment in the basement and live there. You know, Bo rotates in 2 weeks, I rotate in 2 weeks, Bo's back, then I'm back, blah, 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 and do it exactly like we were doing before. 400 people, can you imagine?
Doesn't seem like that much.
We got 200,000, we got 200,000 people to sign the petition.
Well, they got to put their money where their mouth is, you know?
Well, unfortunately, we don't have any means of, you know, reaching out to them.
So you have no database whereby you could solicit funds from the 200,000 people that have signed the Credo petition then?
Not really.
Yeah. Well, that's tricky.
But it's a matter of, you know, you get the word of mouth going. I mean, my God, and I say this understanding that it is enough of a struggle just to keep the Horn going, because, you know, we try to raise a similar number. But we've got enough listeners to the Horn that $10 a month at ACAC.org would make that possible. And then we build on it by reaching out to larger America and saying, because, you know, that's a threshold. You know, if it's 800 people at 10 bucks a month, then we can start traveling the country because we can afford the occasional plane ticket or gas to drive a car across the country and talk to groups and do education.
Right.
Get it to 1,000 people at $10 a month, and we can start saying, okay, we want to talk with Congressman Thumbfingers, and hey, Rick, you live in Congressman Thumbfingers' district. We want to fly you to D.C. so you can be a constituent sitting there saying, I voted for you, now I need something from you.
That would be very, very helpful to have that ability to do that. And you guys could even have like a minivan or something that ran totally on electric power. Well, I don't know if that's necessarily such a good idea, because that's probably, the electricity probably comes from coal plants, I would think, right?
At some point in time, yeah, you're going to hook up to a coal-fired grid.
Yeah, so I guess that's not so much of a great message to put out. It's not worth it. But, I'm trying to tell as many friends as I can about your show. There's a friend in Colorado who might be listening tonight. Hi, Lori, if you're there.
Hi, Lori.
Hello.
And I was hoping she could cue into the group tonight. Her mom's visiting from, I think, Washington State. And so she may be with her mom tonight. But, if nothing else, she'll probably hear this on podcast. So, I guess just word of mouth like that.
Well, right, and you know, and everything that we've done with the Ake Act has been word of mouth pretty much thus far, and a ton of that. I mean, there is hardly a single co-sponsor of the bill right now who has not been reached out at some point in time to by a member of the Horn Family Commune congregation.
Right.
I mean, it's really a matter of difference making.
Right. Let me ask you this. Do you know if Congressman Adam Schiff out of the Burbank area, who's my congressman, has signed on to the AIC Act?
Off the top of my head, I think he has.
Okay.
Let me check here.
Yeah.
I don't know who my congressperson is, but the one I support is Judy Chu, because she was my professor, and I know she supported the ACAF.
You're out in Pass. Are you east? I think it's Judy Chu. I think you're right.
No, yeah, you're Judy Chu, and she's a big supporter.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I'm not in her district though. I forgot the name of my congressperson, but she was my former professor in college.
What's your zip code, Tim?
90032.
Hold on.
Okay.
Here comes Rick to the rescue.
It's a male Hispanic dude. I wish Judy was my congresswoman. She's cool.
And we know Larry's congresswoman supports it.
Exactly.
She better.
She is. She is. Absolutely, she is.
Yes, Adam. Yeah. Adam Schiff got on the bill on the day that it was introduced.
Yeah, good.
Excellent, excellent. He's a good guy. He's also against the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and
yeah, we don't have
what have you.
We don't have nearly the co-sponsors on it right now that we had in previous Congresses because we can't get there to remind them to get on board. And frankly, it would be nice if emails were sufficient. But a lot of times you got to go knock on the door. So far, it's John Yarmuth, Louise Slaughter, Jerry Connolly, Rosa DeLauro, Adam Schiff, Jim McDermott, Eleanor Holmes Norton, Alan Lowenthal, John Sarbanes, Nikki Tsongas, Paul Tonko, Betty McCollum, Donna Edwards, Jan Schakowsky, Michael Honda, Raul Grijalva, Matt Cartwright, Jerry McInerney, Mark DeSaunier, and Diana DeJet.
Mark DeSaunier is in Contra Costa County, and he represents northern Contra Costa County. The thing about him is that he used to be one of those, what did they call the Rockefeller Republicans?
Yes.
But when Republicans became really insane, then he became a Democrat.
I'll be darned. I'm a little surprised to see that that Keith Ellison isn't back on the bill. We need to do some outreach.
Bob, I just a shout out to Tim here. Javier Becerra is the congressman for the 34th Congressional District in zip code 90932. I didn't hear his name. He's a very good Democrat as far as I know.
Yes, he is.
Yeah, he's probably in the PCC, I would think, the Congressional Caucus for Progressives.
Yeah, sometimes nothing's automatic up there.
Trying to contact them.
So sometimes you have to reach out and just kind of give them a little polite nudge.
Yes, ask and you shall receive, as they say.
I shall. I'll send them an email.
Cool.
Judy Chu's name isn't on there either.
No, and she was integral early on. So, you know, somebody needs to reach out to Judy.
I'll ask her again.
Maybe she's not aware it's been reintroduced.
Precisely. I mean, they send out these things called Dear Colleague letters, but I get the sense that there's 100 of them a day.
Yeah.
And they get prioritized. But if somebody who knows her reaches out and says, hey, you know, Judy, get back on the bill. We need you.
Yeah, plus it's the squeaky wheel theory as well, you know.
Exactly. Oh, by the way, let me just mention... Since we're getting near the end of the program, it's 25 minutes past the hour, past the third hour of the program, we have kind of stalled. Jack got us started this evening, and then Texas Tea jumped in, and Texas Tea was followed in short order by John, which leaves us at $105 to go for our fundraising this evening. So, you know, there's that interesting gazintas and cipherins. You know, 10 folks, 10 bucks. One person, $105. I really don't matter. and we'll be done for the evening. And I sure hope West Virginia Public Radio gets that $160,000 that they need by the end of June so they can keep on having Friday on the front porch.
Can't they just have the National Petroleum Corporation donate whatever they need?
Well, they probably will.
The shortfall?
And they'll go and they'll put the bite on Spillman Thomas and Jackson and Kelly and the law firms that make their bones by screwing injured workers and representing coal companies and various other poisoners who need to rehabilitate their image. They'll probably get it, but you know, I worry about them. I mean, I want them to be able to continue to have Friday on the front porch.
Well, there you go. That's right.
I mean, I'd hate to have the concept stolen from us and then have them have to quit.
Yeah.
I was thinking, you know, they bogarted that. I wonder if we need to rename it. And I was thinking about, you know, English and grammar and usage. And I was trying to think how we could fix it so they couldn't grab it. And I was thinking, would it be Friday on the fucking front porch or Friday on the front fucking porch?
Probably the front fucking porch, unless you're on the front porch.
Right. I like Friday on the front fucking porch. But, you know, because they're on the terrestrial censored radio, so they can't say that terrible, terrible word that every human being in America knows and uses.
Right. And you hear on every program that's on HBO or whatever, or, you know, every cable program that is not, like, subject to, you know, standards and practices and such, you know?
Right.
Well, they still bleep it on Jon Stewart, but, they he said it.
Right.
Oh, by the way, I got an unlooked for and quite surprising little amen from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan, when I mentioned going over and beating the ever living shit out of the gun goobers who dared to invade that church meeting last night. See, I mean, we're nonviolent. We don't want anybody hurt. And I'm not saying they should have been. I am simply saying I am amazed at the restraint that it must have taken not to.
Well, you know, I think just about anyone, you know, during the Blues Brothers movie, the scene where they had the sound truck, the Blues Brothers were driving and they drove right through a Nazi parade and they forced them to jump into the water. I think everybody was cheering at that scene because everybody hates Nazis.
Well, unfortunately, I don't think I think in 2015 America, you'd probably get some people booing when that happened now.
Yeah, or maybe half the crowd would boo. You never know.
Look at them degenerates being mean to those good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Nazis.
They're just exercising the First Amendment rights. Come on,
celebrate,
what's wrong with that?
And celebrating their heritage.
And white pride.
Hoo-ah. Hey, I just realized I haven't said good evening to Larry, and Larry's been sitting there patiently. I don't know if he's been going through his evening routine or anything, but if you're there, Larry. Oh, by the way,
I'm here. I tried to remain patient and not jump in, and just to be patient.
Well, your Zen is in good working order, Larry.
I think a cowbell's in order there, Bob.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you. I was just looking at the congressional page, and I wonder if you've contacted Jared Huffman. He's represents Marin County.
We haven't contacted anybody because we can't be in D.C.
Oh, okay. Well, what I got and what I should have obviously, which is patently obvious, and I shouldn't have to restate it, is it looks like the Sierra Club is okay if the ACAC passes so that they can take credit for supporting it, but they just don't want to support the organization that's been doing all the work, and they don't want to help the little greens grow. That's the whole point.
Limousine liberals.
You know, they just don't want to see Coal River Mountain Watch grow and get any credit for anything.
Well, see, it's kind of hard to put a picture of Bo Webb or me or Vernon Haltom on a fundraising email and say, can you send us $15 right now and we'll send you an authentic Vernon Haltom manufactured in a sweatshop in China. It doesn't work.
Okay, well, I just thought that it was just really, really interesting because I'm kind of partial to Coal River Mountain Watch getting some,
you know, maybe it's not that important, you know, maybe ultimately in the big expense of things, as long as the bill gets passed, that's the most important thing. Anyway, I'm still working on, I sent Timmy an email to get in touch with the UUA district director, so hopefully he'll get a chance to meet up with him at the table, the email I sent out.
Right.
And I also met up with Christopher Hedges. Chris Hedges came to speak on Tuesday, and he's pretty much with us on a lot of things, although he's a lot more strident and believes that things are really desperate in the country.
Well, I admire a lot of Chris's ideas. Chris is, and I'm not using the term like it's used in the Big Lebowski, and there was German nihilists. Chris is a nihilist. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
Well, it's interesting. I talked with Rick. Rick and I had a conversation last night on Skype, and I was mentioning that Chris, first of all, when I bought his new book and he signed it, it was hardback, I said, you know, because I read your last book about Pine Ridge and also about Appalachia, I was going to support the AG Act and support Bob Kincaid anyway, but reading your book in 2012 jump-started and reconnected my concern for the two communities, for the Appalachian community and for the Native American community, so I thank you for it. He didn't really respond to that, but that's the truth, Bob. So it was part him and part you that got me going on all this stuff.
I remember when he was here in West Virginia, and he said, frankly, given what's been done to you here, I'm surprised there's not a shooting revolution going on. And he said something like, if anybody has a right to, you do. And yet you're holding fast to the principles of nonviolence.
Yes.
He's a Christian, huh?
Well, he comes out of the liberal church. Now, I don't know which liberal church he comes out of.
I think he's from the Catholic social worker.
Yeah, he was studying to be a priest.
Right. Yeah.
Uh-huh. But the thing is when he started talking about the election, and he's not going to support Bernie Sanders because Bernie wants to run as a Democrat. And he said by Bernie Sanders running as a Democrat, Bernie Sanders is giving credence to one of the parties that is part and parcel of the problem.
Of the problem, yet Chris wants a pony, I understand.
Of the problem, and then he said, because the problem with that is if Bernie doesn't run as a Democrat, if he doesn't run as a Democrat, he won't be a part of the debates, but if he becomes part of the debate, then he has to support, if he doesn't get the primary nod, then he has to support whatever Democrat the Democrats choose, and then
maybe that's because Bernie is politically mature. Maybe that's because Bernie does not. Bernie recognizes that I want a unicorn sparkle pony that farts glitter ain't on the ballot.
Yeah. Well, what Chris asked him is, he said, "Why don't you run as an independent?" And what Bernie said is, "Look, if I run as an independent, I'm going to end up just like Ralph Nader ended up. I'm going to run as an independent, and I'm going to take votes away." And then they're going to blame, and the Democrats are going to blame me for taking votes away from their candidate. And then I'm going to lose all my chairmanships, and I'm going to lose whatever influence
he's not even running for Senate again, Larry. I would have preferred, a much more straightforward, honest answer. I'm running as a Democrat because I would actually like to win the election.
Okay.
Because we have to start there with all of this independent candidacy horseshit. No third party candidate is going to win the presidency. I don't care if it's Rand Paul, Ron Paul, Bernie Sanders, Ralph Nader, Jill Stein, or anybody else who's a member of the I Want a Pony Committee.
they ain't gonna win. This is not a parliamentary system. This is not a multi-party divide-the-spoils system. There are two names on the goddamn ballot, and one of them wins.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not yelling at you. You understand.
Yeah, you're just vehemently trying to explain, to clarify to people.
And I love these political purists who say, well, I'm tired of voting for the lesser of two evils. Well, okay. Then
because it's still evil.
Because the lesser of two evils is always still evil. Evil! Well, the fact of the matter is, you know, we got an object lesson in that in 2000. I remember the cartoon that Bart Cop, God rest his soul, or Flying Spaghetti Monster, or if he had one, or whatever. I remember the cartoon he used to show of two people in gas masks looking at a sort of sepia-colored black and brown landscape of smokestacks belching filth into the air, and one gas mask says to the other gas mask, well, Mr. Nader, do you still think that George Bush and Al Gore were the very same?
Yeah.
I mean, it drives me crazy. It really, really does. Because I don't know of anybody who will sit there and say, well, you know, everything would have played out exactly like it did under Bush if we'd had President Gore.
Because, well, President Gore should have won because
never mind the should have won, Larry. President Gore would not have been off cutting brush and saying, what's this? Bin Laden determined to... I'll give this to Brownie. Fuck it. I'm on vacation.
Yes, that's right.
Okay?
Well, the other thing about Chris, after he spoke, and he was off to speak to some pretty interesting students, but he had in his arm a copy of a book about the deep state, and that's a thesis that's advanced by Peter Dale Scott, who is an English professor at UC Berkeley, about how we are governed in the society, or the society is basically, you know, there's a deep state that we can't see. And I said, what does that thesis mean? He said, I was with Peter Dale Scott for lunch today. I think what he's talking about, the deep state, is kind of like what C. Wright Mills was talking about the power elite. You know that textbook, The Power Elite, that was written in 1956 by C. Wright Mills, the sociologist of the New Left. But the thing is, I didn't mention to Chris, I had on the tips of my tongue about the political ponerology, and I know that that's a thesis that Carol has advanced, and we've talked about quite a bit amongst us on the Horn chat and also in the Malloy chat. So I'm hoping that Carol will be able to somehow get him a copy of political ponerology. But thus far, when I mention political ponerology to the few people that I've talked about it with, they look at me like I'm some kind of that I've got my Vulcan ears.
Courtesy of Carol, I'm reading it, and it is dense reading. It needs to be, how can I put this? It needs to be distilled for an American audience. I don't necessarily mean that it needs to be made more stupid, but that word alone, ponerology, that conjures up images of people trying to read bumps on heads. Okay? We need to make it, somehow or another, more accessible. Because it's about the most... the information is valid and good and real, but it is about as inaccessible a piece as I've read in a very, very, very long time.
Carol has suggested to me that I read Robert Hare's book. Robert Hare is the Canadian psychiatrist who has done studies into sociopathy, and she suggests that's a lot more, it's a lot easier. The ideas are still there, but the prose is a lot easier to grasp. Right now I'm feeling like I'm having a hard time even grasping Mary Had a Little Lamb. Well, you know, I mean, you know what I'm saying metaphorically, Bob. Things just seem to be, you know, things that, you know, would normally make crystal clear sense right now to me aren't for whatever reason. But she suggested getting Robert Hare's book, either...
Called Without Conscience.
Yes.
Oh, and hey, let me bring the stress line on. Sorry you've had to wait for so long. Are you still there?
Yeah. What's up, Bob?
Well, you know, Mad Mike.
Hey, look, I got one or two things to say, and I'm gonna get off your phone here and let you guys, you know, do what you do. Wednesday I was on there, we talked, and you and Carol were gonna give me a civics lesson, but you waited until after I got off the phone to do that. But what I wanna say is,
well, there was nothing untoward in that. I mean, we don't.
Okay, it's okay. It's
we only
okay.
do we I'll, only I'll, we only do group conversations on Friday.
I got it. And you guys are a great group of people. Trust me. I know that your hearts are in the right place, and you'd like to see real change. Unfortunately, I don't think you're ever going to see it the way you're doing it, the way you're trying to do it, and that is by trying to reinforce change. Manipulate the Democratic Party. I don't know how much more you have to see. In fact, I get the idea from listening to you guys that if there weren't term limitations involved, you guys would be beyond, you know, behind a third Barack Obama candidacy for president.
Well, let me address that right off the bat. Okay. I am of the opinion, regardless of whether it is Ronald Reagan or Barack Obama or George W. Bush or Bill Clinton, or George H.W. Bush, or any president since that amendment was to the Constitution was ratified, that is probably one of the greater constitutional mistakes we have made in the history of this nation.
Well, and you may well be right, because you know, we might could you know, be completely into the throes of fascism by now if that wasn't the case. But that being said,
I'm sorry. What? Wait.
Well, we could have had, you know, more conservative idiots in there to follow the ones that we had if there weren't limitations. Bush might have been elected the third time, you know? You never know.
Yeah.
I mean, we could have been much further down the road to fascism. But what I'm trying to say, Bob, is this. It doesn't matter whether you're back in the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. You're on the road to fascism. You might get there a little slower and easier with the Democratic Party, but you're going to the same fucking place. And until America wakes up and realizes that the dual-party system in America is what's causing all of our problems completely, and that just because a guy's black in the White House doesn't make him good, just like Clarence Thomas, Barack Obama is an Oreo. He is an Oreo.
I don't care. I don't care if somebody's a black on the white on the outside, white on the inside, Asian around the edges and Native American through the middle.
Okay,
that's not my concern, but I do. But I do want to point out one thing. You're worrying about fascism. That ain't where we're going. We're already at fascism, Mike. We've been there for a while. Okay, where we're going is collapse.
That's right, we are. And the more we support the same system that we have, be it Democrat or be it Republican, you're still going there. You might not go quite there as, you know, as fast as you would otherwise, but you're still going there. Here's the thing, Bob. I like your show. I like the people. I know you people are good people. The heart's in the right place. But I can't participate further in this. Because I know that we need to be going in a different direction, and my work is pushing us in a different direction. I'll still, you know, go with Mike Malloy because I know he gets it. Okay, I talk to him regularly. I know he gets it. I'm afraid that the people here are locked into this idea that we have to do something with this two-party system, to make this whole thing
work.
Well,
tell me about the no-party system or the multi-party system that you're going to create, Mike.
It doesn't matter whether you create a third party, whether everybody goes green and we get Bernie Sanders to go green or whoever you want to go green. Bernie Sanders isn't even, you know, my favorite choice, because while he might be a sparkle pony or just a pony or maybe with sparkles and a unicorn, he also needs to be Pegasus with wings. The person we put in the highest office of the land has to be willing to take it.
Well, how are you going to get President Stein to the White House?
Well, there's only one way you can do it, okay? And there's only one way you can do it, and that is you have to have every single progressive apparatus in this country to work together towards a solution of getting a person elected to that office that is not beholden to the corporations. And that's not going to be any of the damn Democrats. You've already seen that happen over the last several terms of Barack Obama.
Well, we are certainly, and you're going to have to do it by making bricks without straw, too, because this is, thanks to Anthony Kennedy, there's no longer even the presumption that money can create corruption
right.
in politics. So we're going
right.
to have we're going to have all the progressives leave the Democratic Party and work for a party that has no money and no power and no base of support in the Congress or in the judiciary. And we're going to have to elect, and we're going to have to elect Jill Stein, and we're going to have to give her constitutional powers that she doesn't have.
No, she has the power. The executive has the power to do what needs to be done. It's a sad fact that Barack Obama didn't exercise any of those powers from day one he got in office. He did not exercise the powers he had.
What about all those executive orders that the right wing would damned well like to impeach him over?
He at the very end of his last term here, he has done a few things like raising the federal minimum wage to $10, not 15, but 10. And he has opened the door to normalizing relations with Cuba, which could have been done on day one when he came into office, as well as closing Guantanamo. But I'm telling you that you need someone in that office who will actually take the bull by the horns and do what needs to be done.
Mike, with all due respect, have you ever even read the Constitution?
Yeah, Paul, I have. In fact, I got a copy of the Bill of Rights right handy here.
Well, I mean, that's wonderful. I mean, Bob Byrd used to carry one in his coat pocket all the time, but he had also read it extensively.
I heard Robert Byrd voting it on the Senate floor as he was, you know, voting for more and more stuff that was wrong for you guys, okay? You're not going to get there with these Democrats. You are not going to get there with them. There's no way you can do it. There's too much money, too much influence. They don't care. When you talk about having your people call and these Congress critters and stuff and say, I voted for you, I need you to do something for me, they don't give a rat's ass who voted for them. All they care about is who bought the votes. That's all they care about.
Okay, well, let me get a call into those co-sponsors of the AIC Act and tell them to remove their names, because that's exactly how we got those names on there in the first place, Mike.
Well, when you end up with what you're doing there through your Congress critters stopping Mountaintop Removal, you let me know, and I'm going to join in.
But in the meantime, Mike.
In the meantime, I'll
you're
going with another solution.
And I'm waiting to hear what it is. Are we talking about violent overthrow of the government?
Well, you know what? If all the people, you know, that would vote here are already staying away from the polls in record numbers. You're seeing this happening, and it's just going to get worse. Once you know, everybody realizes that nothing that happens there is happening for them, okay, they're going to be willing to go into a third option. And if that third option is not there and viable for them, with staffed with people who really care, like you guys, I know you guys care. Don't get me wrong, Bob. I know you care, okay? The problem is you're misguided in the idea that you think you can change the system from what it is, and you cannot change the system. It has to be done away with.
So in other words, Mike, you're saying sort of similar to what Christopher Hedges is saying and a lot of radical people.
Christopher Hedges is right about all of it.
Like Richard Wolff. Are saying that we cannot fix a system working within a system that's already become rotten. We have to replace we have to replace the system we've got and replace it with a completely different system.
Well, you know, there is a right-wing move for a constitutional convention. And I'm sorry?
Chris Hedges is right about all of it. You have to walk away from what you've got here. You have to turn your back on it, walk away from it, because it will not work for you. It cannot ever work for you, because it's all strictly there structured to work only for the people with the money. It's the only ones they're ever going to work for. So if you don't turn your back on that and walk away from it and start getting into something, vote poor. Vote for the person that has no money, that has no advertising. You know, you've got to build an alternative. imperative for people to go to it.
How's the guy who has no advertising going to advertise the fact that he has no advertising and he's poor?
He doesn't have to. All you have to do is wait for these people to turn away from the system, get these people to turn away from the system, and go to those third parties, the fourth markets that are struggling to come into existence now. Okay? They are. They're struggling to come into existence, and we need them.
Wait, the third.
Bob, I think it's time for a Star Trek reference. What's that impossible task that Captain Kirk succeeded
in? The Kobayashi Maru?
There you go. That's what we need for our political system.
Well, Mike, I understand, and I have spent a lot of time on this issue.
Chapter.
But the problem is, whether you like it or not, this country exists within a certain system.
I know what you're saying, Bob.
And absent something like an October Revolution in the Soviet Union, in which a lot of people wind up against walls getting shot. Mm-hmm. And absent, and the other thing that comes with all of this, and bear in mind, we're getting it incrementally, I agree, but as long as the cable stays on, your dream is not going to become reality.
As long as
there's got to be hard questions answered. In this revolutionary world that you want, how are you going to feed hungry people? How are you going to make sure that the Social Security checks keep going out? How are you going to make sure that people continue to have health care? How are you going to make sure that the payments go out for Medicare and Medicaid so that hospitals stay open? How are you going to keep the roads paid? The Soviets learned a lot of these lessons the hard way after 1917, when they couldn't keep the hospitals open, when they couldn't feed people, when they couldn't keep the payroll going. I mean, some of these things you're talking about come from the starve the beast arguments. They're identical to the starve the beast arguments that are promulgated by the Tea Party.
Look, don't get me wrong. Like I said, I know that you guys are good people, and I will occasionally still listen to the program. But I'm probably not going to spend time calling in here to talk to you guys about this.
Well, that's okay, Mike. It's a free country. But,
I know, but we're on convergent paths. You've got a path you think is going to work for you, and if that works for you, I'm all for you staying on it. This path won't work for me. I need something that's different and hard, okay? But I have enjoyed the time that I've spent talking to you. And
well, I think our discussions have been enjoyable as well. And I'm sorry if your feelings are hurt somewhere along the way. I certainly did not intend that.
I don't have hurt feelings. I want to see a change different from the change you guys want to see. And I'm all for it. If you guys could get the change you wanted to see through the means you want to get there, I'd be all for you getting there. And like I told you before, if Bernie Sanders is on the ticket in November, I'm going to vote for him. But if he does not win the Democratic primary, I am not voting for Hillary Clinton. Nor will I vote for Jeb Bush. I will vote for Jill Stein. I will.
That is an American problem. That's a Hillary problem. That's not a Mike in South Carolina problem. That's a Hillary problem.
Because there are a lot
of people out here who, for a variety of reasons, have decided that there is no way in heaven or hell that they're ever going to vote for her. And Jeb Bush has the same problem in the Republican Party. The difference being with Jeb Bush and the Republican Party, when it comes down to nut-cutting time in November, those Republicans who say, no way in hell will I ever vote for Jeb Bush, they'll go and they'll vote for Jeb Bush. Because for them, the prospect of President Hillary Clinton, having a vagina in the White House, for Christ's sakes, is absolutely hateful and odious. And they will bite the bullet. But our side is ideologically goddamn pure. And we will stay home and sit on our hands, and we'll talk about how no more Clintons, no dynasties, by God, until we're watching the TV watching Jeb Bush get inaugurated.
I got to tell you one more thing about racism in America today, because I know it's a topic I'll talk about a lot on this program. But it's not as bad, I don't think, in the Republican Party as you think it is, because, I mean, they did get Clarence Thomas on the Supreme Court. But here's the other thing. Here in South Carolina, we had a demented gem who who left to work for the American Enterprise Institute for millions of dollars, left his Senate seat open. Well, our governor here appointed a black man to replace him.
Yeah, Tim Scott.
Okay. Now, he just passed and got reelected in a regular election, okay, to another term as Senate. So it's not so much for them as it is a racist thing, as it is an ideological thing. And
oh, yeah, they voted. They saw the content of the man's character and not the color of his skin, and the content of his character
like
was 100% Republican, and they voted their ideology.
That's right. It's like Michael Steele being you're running the Republican Party. The thing for them is not so much you know what color you are, but are you going to talk and walk the walk, and they are doing that. Okay. And Scott does the same thing. And I think he's as despicable as Lindsey Graham or any of the rest of the Republicans. Okay. But what I'm trying to say is these were white people here in South Carolina that reelected this guy, to a full term in Senate. Okay. So it's not the color thing. Okay. It's not.
Well, no. I think
it's like Republicans lining up to support Obama for the TPP. They're all behind him, 100%, every single Republican there is, okay? It's not a racist thing. It's only racist when they want it to be to impress their base, okay?
Well, right. You know, you only use the dog whistle when you want to call dogs, Mike.
That's right.
All right, well, I hate to say it, but we are out of time this evening. I've enjoyed the conversation, Mike, and I wish you a good weekend, and maybe we'll hear from you again, maybe we won't.
Yeah.
But either way, you know, be well. Take care.
Keep up the good work, guys.
We're trying.
You're doing good.
Bye now.
See you.
Mad Mike from South Carolina. It is time to get out, and I want to, before we go, thank Tim very, very, very kindly. Thank you, Tim, so much. We are now only $30 away from finishing fundraising for the evening, and that's a big deal because, well, it's always a big deal because keeping this little effort on the air, to me, and to y'all, and to the larger Horn Family Commune congregation, even the folks we don't hear from very often, is a big deal. So thank you, everyone. Thank you very much. Thank you, of course, always to Sparky, the longtime moderator of the Horn Molloy Skype chat group. Thank you to everybody who participated this evening. Thank you, Kevin, for being on the stress line, as well as Mad Mike. We got to get out of here. Of course, the Horn Molloy Skype chat group will continue after this program off air, and it will continue with real aplomb after Molloy closes at about 5 minutes after midnight Eastern time, 5 minutes after 9 Pacific time. Thanks again, everybody. Have a wonderful weekend. And, well, you know what? Moran Monday will be on us before we know what happened. And by God, I'll bet we'll have Moran's stacking up like cordwood by Saturday afternoon. And by the way, the Franken moth, it's called the diamondback moth, if you want to look it up. The diamondback moth. Thank you to Agnes for reminding me a little bit ago. So, there we go. There you have it. And thanks to everyone who keeps the program going. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net and ACAC.org, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.